On today's episode of the Productivity Podcast, I'm talking to David Sparks all about how to get more out of your Mac.
Welcome to the Productivity Podcast, the show that will supercharge your productivity fast. Get more done with actionable, easy-to-follow advice, and become a Jedi Master of Productivity. And now, introducing your host, Paul Miners.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Productivity Podcast, and I'm really excited to introduce David Sparks and get stuck into this interview today. David is the host, or the co-host, of the Mac Power Users podcast, and it's a podcast I started listening to earlier in the year, and I have to say that the advice that he has given, along with Katie Floyd, the other co-host, on this podcast is phenomenal. I've actually gone back and listened to a lot of the previous episodes as well. As a Mac user, I really love finding out how to be more efficient with my tools. And with the advice that David and Katie have given on the Mac, it really has helped to transform literally the way I work in terms of I can get things done a lot quicker. I love using tools now like Text Expander and Hazel for just being way more efficient on the Mac. So it was really great to chat to David as part of this episode. So I hope you enjoyed the interview. If you want to view the show notes for this episode, all of the links to the tools that we mention can be found at the show notes, which is at paulminers.com/50. And if you have any questions about anything, be sure to reach out to David, leave him a comment, or reach out to him on Twitter as well. And without further ado, let's get stuck into this interview with David Sparks. Enjoy. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Productivity Podcast. Thank you for tuning into this episode. And today it is my pleasure to introduce you to David Sparks. Welcome, David, to the show.
Thanks, Paul. It's my pleasure.
Awesome to have you here. Now, David, I'm going to let David explain what he does, but David is one of the co-hosts of the Mac Power Users podcast, which is a podcast I've been listening to for this beginning of this year. I think I started listening and have been loving it. Really love the advice that you and Katie have been putting out on the Mac Power Users podcast, and you've personally like helped me to become a lot more productive on my computer. So thank you, David, for everything that you're doing.
Well, thanks. The idea behind Mac Power Users from the beginning was, there were so many podcasts out there that just talk about what's the latest rumor with Apple or technology in general. We wanted to make a show that could make listeners better. So, the name Mac Power Users is aspirational. And the idea is we pick a subject every week and we dive deep on it. And we start with the basics and work our way to the complex. And the idea is people listening will get turn themselves into power users. We don't just cover Mac, though. We also cover iPad and iPhone, and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. It is a really great show, and I love the level of detail that you go into, and I think that's really what I find sets the show apart, is that you just go into that level of detail that I think the power user really wants to hear. So I think it is a really great show, and anyone who has a Mac that, even if you're not like that advanced, I think you guys do a real good job of covering and catering to lots of different levels of people who are maybe new to the Mac, but again, the people who are a bit more advanced, the power users as well.
We really are kind of careful. Like, we don't get into like heavy duty programming. I mean, that's not really what the show's about. It's more about taking people who just want to get better at their technology. And it's really a lot of fun. Like I said, we've been doing it since 2009. Believe it or not, we're up in our 300s now.
Yeah, that is a long time to be running a podcast. Wow. Back before podcasting was cool.
Yeah. We were nerds when it was just nerdy.
So, David, could you tell the people listening a little bit more about yourself and what do you do? What do you spend your time on? Because you've got a few different projects and things that kind of fight for your time.
Yeah, I do. I'm a man of many hats. And in addition to being a broadcaster for the podcast, I have another podcast called Free Agents that I record with my friend Jason Snell, where we talk about being independent workers. I'm an author. I've written 7 books on technology. I've got 5 of them are self-published in the Apple iBookstore. I make movies about how to use software, kind of like screencast movies that are at maxsparky.com. And then in my free time, I'm a business lawyer. So, like I said, I get around.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about like how do you manage your time, or what does your productivity workflow look like to manage all these different areas? Do you like have a set number of hours that you're doing for each thing per week, or is it kind of a bit more flexible and you can kind of shift your focus quite naturally? How do you kind of balance everything?
Yeah, there's nothing rigid about it. Paul. I think the trick is to be able to assess, you know, on a weekly and daily basis, what's important that day or that week, and then focus your effort on that. And, you know, I've intentionally kind of engineered my different careers in ways that they're not super time intensive, deadline intensive, I guess is the better way to put it. So I don't usually have things, you know, crash into other things. But even then, it's hard. You know, it's hard having two things that you do. But I enjoy them both. I mean, I'm not like a lot of people who are doing two things are working to escape one of them to the exclusion of the other one. And I don't really feel that way. I do enjoy being a lawyer, and I do enjoy doing this technology stuff. So that makes me kind of a weirdo.
No, but that's really good, because it is so important to enjoy what you do instead of, yeah, like I think you're right in that a lot of people probably fall into that category of, you know, they don't like their day job, and so maybe they do something on the side, or they have their thing they do in their spare time as a form of escapism. And so no, it's great to like have your time be split between so many things that you genuinely love and that you're so passionate about, which is the ultimate goal, really.
Yeah, but it's still hard, honestly.
Well, let's get into some of the Mac productivity tips, because that is why you're here. So let's talk about for people who are like first getting started on the Mac, if it's like fairly entry level stuff, maybe they've had a Mac for a little while and they just want to be using it more a little bit more effectively. What are some of the first few pieces of advice you would give to someone in that kind of situation?
I think if you want to get better at your computer, there's a lot of stuff built in there to make it go a little faster. And this stuff really adds up. If you've got just a few tricks that can save you, let's say a minute a day, but you do those tricks 30 times a day, which is a completely realistic goal for someone who doesn't know anything about this stuff, that like within a month, you could be saving yourself 30 minutes a day. And that's 30 minutes sooner to get out of the office and go home, or move on to some other work that's more important or whatever. I mean, you got to look at, you know, there's a benefit to spending a little bit of time learning that. And I think there's kind of different layers of getting involved with this stuff, starting out with just the basics. Whether you're using a Windows PC or a Mac, it doesn't matter. They all have good, what we call keyboard shortcut support built in. And the mouse is awesome, right? You know, it's great. It makes it really easy to get access to commands that you wouldn't know. I'm old enough, Paul, to have remembered starting computing on a command line, you know, back in the day of IBM PC and Apple II. And you had to like memorize all these weird commands to get it to do stuff. And the mouse was awesome because all of a sudden you could just go to a menu, find what you want and click on it. But every time you do that, you're taking your hand off the keyboard. You know, just kind of follow along with me as I'm saying this. Just imagine it. Take your hand off the keyboard, get the mouse, move the mouse. So you got to find the mouse on the screen. Then you got to put the mouse over whatever menu it is. Then you got to drag down and look for it. And quite often, you know exactly what you're looking for. Like, how many times a day do you click the save button, right? You know exactly what you want, but you still got to go through that process of getting this very precise user interface component placed over the exact pixel it needs to be and then pressing the button. That takes time, you know, and if you do a keyboard shortcut on the Mac, it's Command S, you know, so the Command key, which is right next to your spacebar, and S. Or on the PC, it's usually Control S, but it depends. So you just hit Command S or Control S, and you just saved your document. And that is a lot faster way to do it. So think about the number of times you save a day. Get that keyboard shortcut down, and you just saved yourself a bunch of time. And, you know, when you start doing the math of adding it up over the days, the weeks, the years, you save yourself a lot more time than you expected.
Yeah, I really have to agree. Like, it sounds like a really kind of non-glamorous piece of advice, like learn keyboard shortcuts, but it really is. It is so true. And I find myself trying to learn as many as I can. And even when I do have to use the mouse, I even hacked the mouse a little bit to speed it up beyond what Apple will allow in the system preferences. There was a terminal command you can use to speed up the mouse even faster, so that if I do have to resort to using the mouse, at least it's even a little bit faster. But it's such a simple and such a great piece of advice, which is to learn those shortcuts. And even I find a lot of online services now come standard with their own sets of shortcuts. So if you use Gmail for managing your email, or like I'm a big Asana user, they have their own shortcuts. And so the shortcuts aren't just limited to the application's that you use and the user interface that you're on, but the services that you use as well and the online tools probably have their own set of shortcuts. And it really does, like you said, like a few seconds here and there adds up to a lot over the course of a day, when a lot of us, you know, spending kind of 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a day on the computer. So it really does add up a lot.
Now the problem with it is, though, if you're listening to this and you're like, hey, that's a great idea, I want to do that, and you go to your computer tomorrow and you get a list of, you know, let's say you just go online or you look in your app and you find 20 keyboard shortcuts you want to learn. You know how many of those you're going to still be using in a week?
Probably not many.
Yeah, zero. That's my scientific test there. That you can't learn it that way. What you need to do is pick 3, or at most 3, and say, okay, I'm going to get better. Every time I'm going to print, I'm going to hit Command P. Every time I'm going to save, I'm going to hit Command S. And every time I'm going to open, I'll hit Command O or some other command they use a lot. And get those 3 and just use it. And every time you go to print, save, or whatever, use that keyboard shortcut. In a week or two, you will no longer be thinking about it when you do it. Your fingers will just hit the buttons and you'll go on it. It becomes muscle memory. And that's the magic there. Once it becomes muscle memory, they can't take it away from you. So get that muscle memory down, then go find 3 more. And you will build up over the course of a month or two this like wizard-like ability to drive your computer. And you could be a complete computer novice listening to this, but in a month your coworkers are going to go like, holy mackerel, Paul is just like a monster on his computer. I can't believe. Well, and they look at your fingers and you're not touching the mouse and stuff is happening. You'd be surprised how fast that someone can get really good at this stuff. And it's like I said, it's not rocket science. You just got to take time and break it into bite-sized pieces.
Yeah, really, really good advice. In fact, I was just at work the other day, and I was sitting with a colleague and writing out an email quickly, and I just did I used the shortcuts to browse through, navigate through a sentence. You know, you can on a Mac you can use Option and then the arrow keys to actually jump your cursor from word to word in a sentence. And so I quickly jumped to the middle of the sentence, selected the words that I wanted to use as a link, and then hit Command K, which is typically the shortcut that you would use to add a link to a piece of text, and then you paste in a link. And my colleague was just like, wow, what did you just do? Like, how did you do that without the mouse? And I was just like, oh, it's just, you know, this is how you navigate, and Command K, really easy.
Yeah, and that's great, you know, because you're doing stuff like that. I mean, there's all kinds of things, like even like an email. One I use all the time, and I think it's a terrible shortcut. It's in the Apple Mail program. The shortcut to send an email is Command-Shift-D. I mean, I have no idea. Paul, what does the D stand for? I don't understand. It's email. You're sending email. Deliver? I don't know, right?
And archive as well. I think it's Command-Shift-A, isn't it, for archive?
Yeah, but that's easier because at least A has some kind of relation to it.
But D?
Yeah, it's actually Control Command A for archive. But so it's even you move your pinky to another one. So those keyboard shortcuts aren't great, but I memorized them and I made them muscle memory. So I was sending an email to somebody and I was just kind of firing through and pressing buttons and things were going off. And sending an email with the keyboard shortcut, man, it's so powerful when you start getting used to that stuff. One thing Apple did do that was good is they added the same keyboard shortcuts to Apple Mail on the iPad. So I write a lot of email on the iPad, and I can send it the same way. So whatever email application you're using, take a minute and figure out the keyboard shortcuts. You know, so just pick this stuff up incrementally. Now, if you want to go beyond that, I can give you some more advice. But start with the keyboard shortcuts. And this is like a 2 or 3 month project for you. You know, to get better at those keyboard shortcuts before you go on to the next thing.
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking as you were mentioning that shortcut, because I do know that Apple will give you in the System Preferences keyboard menu the option to customize your shortcuts. And I wonder, because I know that in Gmail, you can, or the shortcut to send, which is much easier, is I think it's just hold Command and press Enter, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So I wonder if you could customize just for the mail application that to be your shortcut, hold Command and Enter. And I wonder if Apple would allow that shortcut just in the mail application. I might have to give that a test afterwards.
Yeah, I believe you can. I'm not certain, but the point for me is I don't want to do that because now I have the muscle memory.
Yeah,
and using the default shortcuts is usually a pretty good idea as opposed to creating your own because, like, for instance, on the iPad, I'm not going to be able to change it on the iPad. So I want to have the same keyboard shortcut everywhere I go. And if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. Mm. But the Gmail shortcuts are awesome. Some of them don't even require a modifier key. You just press one key and something happens.
Just press C for compose. It's brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah.
The final shortcut, before we get too carried away on shortcuts, but I also really love on the Mac, and this is almost like the quickest and easiest time saver that I think people can learn first, is just Command-Tab to switch applications. Will save you so much time browsing, trying to use your mouse to find the Safari window or the Finder window, whatever it is. Just Command-Tab to find or switch to the application you want is the quickest, easiest shortcut to learn that will probably save you just so much time during the course of your day.
And then if you want to have fun with that, hold the shift key while you do that. And then you'll go backwards. If you got a big list of apps, you can go forward or backwards. So command tab or shift command tab.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to give you a couple more just because
Let's do it.
I can't help myself. Command delete. So if you wanted to delete a file, rather than finding the trash and dragging it. And, you know, when you drag files, sometimes they land in the wrong place. Just select it, hit command D, delete. I'm sorry, not D, command delete, and it goes away. Another one that's really useful is the keyboard screenshot. It's, Command-Shift-4. Well, there's two of them. Command-Shift-3 takes the whole screenshot, and Command-Shift-4 gives you a little reticle where you can drag it and make a target. But, you know, sometimes you've got something like a bit of information on a website you want to make sure you want to keep. You just take a screenshot of it, say that you're good to go. Okay, I should stop on screenshots. We don't want to make this the screenshot. I'm sorry, we don't want to make this the keyboard shortcut podcast.
But it's awesome. It's, I mean, these are things that are just built in, so very quick and easy to learn. Hopefully everyone's got the message. Go and learn your shortcuts.
Yeah.
Getting into a few more advanced tips then, do you have what are some of the favorite, like, third-party applications that you use on your computer to kind of be more efficient and effective?
Yeah, the gateway drug for me is, if you want to get to third-party apps to get better at this stuff, is Text Expander from Smile Software. It's, already have on the Mac and Windows the ability to type a few letters and have it autocorrect to something. You know, it's called autocorrect generally. So if you mistype pepperoni pizza, it retypes it for you and fixes the word. That's great, but this company called Smile... And full disclosure, they do sponsor my podcast occasionally, but that's not why I'm saying this. They came up with a much improved text expansion tool, and it not only will fill in little words for you, but it can also do a whole lot more. As an example, in my attorney job, I can use text expander snippets to write contract terms, you know, because I've saved certain terms. If I write, you know, X payment clause, it goes bloop, and it just drops in my whole payment clause, and then I can start working with it. Another thing it can do is what they call fill-ins, where you can make a snippet that has fill-in-the-blank stuff. So, like, if you were writing a lot of email for some, let's say you work in customer service, you could do, you know, X customer service email, you know, whatever your shortcut is, and then it opens up a window, and it's got this whole email that you have already written. Let's say it's 5 paragraphs, and there's a little fill-in thing where you can say fill in the name of the customer, fill in the customer order, fill in the date of delivery, you know, all the stuff that changes on an email that you write over and over again. And you just fill it in. And when you're done, it just drops all of that into the email application. And if you get really fancy, I've got some screencasts on this on my website. You can check out at maxsparky.com. You can even do it in the subject line, and it'll fill in the subject. Then it'll hit the tab key, because in an email app, if you hit tab, it jumps to the next field. Then it creates the email to the customer. I mean, it just does the whole thing for you. So it takes something that used to take you maybe 10 minutes a pop to write all these emails to your customers, and it turns it into like a 15-second exercise. So just think about how much time you save once you start doing something like that. And the thing about Text Expander is it's another one of those easy-to-learn tools. Sounds a little intimidating, right, because of the stuff I just said it can do. It's super easy. Anybody that can write a document can use this stuff. And they've got these great video tutorials, so just go through them and you'll learn it. Text Expander, by the way, now has a beta on Windows. So if you're a Windows user, this is something you should check out as well. And it is also on iPhone and iPad and Mac. So all of your information syncs across. So a snippet you create on the Mac will work on the PC or the iPad or the iPhone. It's great.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Text Expander. And even, you know, people can get a lot of value from it for really simple things. Like if you type your email address a lot or your phone number or your address or any of that kind of common information that you probably type out like 10 times a day. It's really useful for just very quickly typing that kind of information. And yeah, I love it. I was actually just using it the other day. I was customizing one of my text snippets because I send quite a few texts to clients as a mortgage advisor. And when we first getting in contact with a client, maybe you try and call them, can't get through, leave a voicemail. I often then send a text. And I've actually been using the optional, what do they call it? Like optional checkbox feature.
Yeah.
And so basically I can customize my text and basically say, based on the information I've got about the person, I can say, oh, it looks like, you know, we can get you a better interest rate or help you with the top up or consolidate some debt. But I can tick some boxes in my text expander pop-up to basically say how we can help them. And it kind of spits out this really nice, seemingly very customized text, very personalized text that's actually taken me about 2 seconds to write. So I just love it. And yeah, I was having a really good play the other day and it saves so much time. When you really challenge yourself to think about how you can use it in the different areas of how you do your work, you know, your emails and other bits of information that you repeat. And I know that Text Expander, yeah, it keeps a track of how many characters you've saved over the life of your kind of how long you've been using it. And so mine's slowly getting up. I haven't been using it as long as you, David. But I was listening to your episode the other day. How much time have you saved using Text Expander now?
You know, let me go look. I'm constantly reinstalling it because I do like educational videos and stuff where I have to do some things with it. Let me see here. Good question. Because the application actually keeps track of how much time you've saved. And that feature that Paul was describing is pretty cool, where you can have like 10 paragraphs and just say, I want to use paragraphs 1, 3, and 7.
Yeah.
And you just select among them.
I'm not that high. I'm up to about 8 hours so far.
Yeah, I'm saved. like 21 days. You know, 21 days of my life.
Oh my goodness.
I use it a lot, though. I mean, I even use it for one of the things I have is a directions to my house thing. You know, if friends are going to come over for barbecue, I just say house directions. You know, with no space, and then it fills in. It's like two paragraphs explaining exactly how to get to my house. And that's the kind of stuff that you can do with this tool. So that's another really easy one to get in on, and it can you know, make a big difference for someone.
Yeah,
especially if you're doing text heavy, you know, work for your day job.
Any other favorite apps you want to mention or discuss quickly?
A couple. There's one called Hazel that is an outstanding application for auto-filing your documents. And so, instance, if you've got, you know, because a lot of the stuff, one of my books is called Paperless and explains how to go paperless in your life. And Hazel is like the magic sauce to all that. Like if you've got a document that you scan on your scanner or you save it with your phone and it has an optical character in it, which most scanners do these days, the computer knows that the document will say life insurance statement in the document. So if the computer knows that, then Hazel will take action on it. It can say, look for any document that says life insurance statement on it, and then give it the name of the date, current date, and life insurance statement. You know, change the name. Then save it to my folder where I save my life insurance statements, and then add to my task list a task to pay the life insurance statement. You know, so it can automate a whole bunch of stuff that you would normally do by hand. And some people use this to great benefit, you know, once they start playing around with it a little bit. And that's a really great tool too, that sounds intimidating, but once again, just about anybody can use. And since I can't help but keep promoting myself here, Paul, I have a really good video on my website that teaches you how to do Hazel if you need help with it.
Yeah, and it's another one of those tools, like it's very easy to get started with, but you can actually do some pretty clever, pretty cool stuff with it once you get comfortable. So I'm probably like a fairly you know, basic user of it. And I get an email with, like, I don't know, like my MailChimp receipt once a month, and I can just download the receipt from my email, hits my downloads folder, and Hazel's looking at the folder and it knows, okay, this is the MailChimp receipt, so I'll just rename it to the date that the receipt was generated, and I'll just call it MailChimp, and then I'll move it into the Dropbox receipts folder, and it's done. And it's just so convenient having that kind of thing just automated, especially for actually that purpose, like receipts and keeping your invoices and things tidy. Your accountant will love you for it. But I was just picking up on one thing you said. You were making like a task based on the invoice or something that you received. Is that, am I right in thinking you use an Apple script to create the task in OmniFocus, is it?
Yeah, that's getting upper level. That's getting more nerdy. Yeah, but yeah, I can do that. And I cover that in the screencast. You know, if you're interested in Hazel, go over to maxbarkey.com/Hazel because I've got like a half hour of the screencast for free. You don't have to buy it. Just watch the half hour. Then you'll know if you like the app or not.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Hazel. Okay, any others? Any other favorite apps you wanna plug?
On the Mac, I would say the next level up, if you get through Hazel, would be something like Keyboard Maestro, which is just a super powerful tool that can do all sorts of things. Like it's another thing that's aware of what the Mac is doing and can take action on it. Like one of the things it can do is monitor which Wi-Fi network you join. So if you show up at work, it can open your browser to the website you use at work and open Microsoft Word and, you know, do certain things that you always do at work. And then if it notices you've logged into your home Wi-Fi, maybe it shuts those windows and opens a different set of windows, like your Photos application or something that you do all the time at home. And that's just the tip of the iceberg for that app. We could do a whole hour on it, but it's a super powerful app, but it's not a good starting place. You need to kind of work your way up to that one.
Yeah, I haven't used it's Keyboard Maestro, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I haven't used Keyboard Maestro, but I've recently been playing with Alfred, which was recommended to me by a friend, Anthony Gowner, who was previously on this podcast. And we were chatting on Slack, and he's like, "Paul, you need to use Alfred." And I was kind of off it for a while. I was like, "It's just Spotlight. Why do I need a different version of Spotlight?" But Alfred's actually really cool. It's like Spotlight on steroids, he described it. And I've been loving it, yeah.
Yeah, it is super powerful. And it's another thing that allows you to drive your computer with a keyboard. And all of that stuff, once you kind of start getting good at it, it really makes a difference. Now, the trick with that, though, is not to just turn yourself into this hyper-productivity person so you can take on more and more work. Then you'll just make yourself crazy. I mean, you should take on the goal of this stuff to give yourself some reward so you don't have to work as hard.
You hit the nail on the head. No, you're absolutely right. Actually, you know the funny thing with Alfred and Hazel, which I just realized, is like Alfred is the icon for the app is like a bowler hat, and I think they describe it as like it's your personal assistant, like your butler for the computer. And then you've got Hazel, which the icon is the little maid's like dusting brush. Yeah. And I just think it's funny that these two productivity apps are kind of like it's the maid and the butler, but they're completely independently developed, but seemingly related.
Well, I don't know if you were old enough, but there used to be a television show called Hazel.
I don't remember, no.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's a challenging question for you, David. If of all the third party apps, if your Mac had to be stripped down to just the core, you know, default Apple apps that you've got, and you could have one like third party app that you can download and install, whether it's Hazel or Alfred or whatever it might be, Text Expander maybe, what do you think would be the one app that you would choose to keep if you were put in that situation?
Wow, that is such an unfair question. I don't know which one saves me more time, Hazel or Text Expander, but my guess is if I had to pick one, it would probably be Text Expander.
Actually, and then moving on, we're actually recording this at a really good time because we've actually just had so many updates from Apple. We've had, obviously, the Mac OS Sierra has just come out. The public launch was yesterday. We've got iOS 10 now, which came out. The iPhone 7 came out last week. The Apple Watch. Of all the updates that have come out recently, David, what have you been most excited about, or what are you getting most pleasure from of all these updates at the moment?
It's funny. This year is a very iterative year with Apple. The iOS 10 and Sierra updates aren't trying to reinvent the world, and I am perfectly fine with that. I think that's kind of what needed to happen. They spent the last couple of years working really hard on interoperability of their devices, so like your watch can talk to your Mac and your phone can talk to your iPad and all that stuff, and that was really difficult from talking to my friends at Apple to make that work seamlessly. And they've kind of got that button down, and now they're just kind of tightening it down everywhere. So this year we didn't have a ton of new features. Siri on the Mac is kind of fun. I really like, they've got this feature now with your Apple Watch. If you're wearing an Apple Watch, you walk up to your Mac and it just unlocks. You don't have to type in your password anymore because it knows that, there's that, you know, David's Apple Watch is really close by. So we're going to make it work. And the funny thing is, they put like so much effort into this stuff. Like one of the problems with making the watch unlock the Mac is if somebody were to spoof it, you know, what if somebody was standing in the next room with a device that could replicate the signal that the watch produces? Well, they actually measure the amount of time it takes to bounce the signal off the watch, and it has to be very close to the Mac. I mean, like within a few feet to work, and it's measuring like. Someone from Apple told me it's measuring like as a percentage of light speed how fast they're doing this stuff. So they've got all these great like new little features, and that's really fun. The photos new features are really fun. Now Apple's Photos application is getting quite powerful. Like you can just say, show me a picture of a dog, and it'll search your whole library and get you pictures of all the dogs, or show me a picture of a baby or mountains or cactus or whatever that, you know, strikes your fancy. And there's a good chance Photos will go find all the pictures that have that stuff in them. Mm. I'm quite happy with it. The new iPhone camera also looks exciting too. I just had everything go wrong that could go wrong in terms of getting a new iPhone this year. So I'm still going to have to wait another week before mine shows up, but a bunch of my friends have it and I'm seeing all these great pictures they're taking, and looking forward to trying that out as well.
Because yeah, I was listening to the episode the other day, and I think you had a bit of drama pre-ordering it at midnight, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, I'm the nerd who stays up until midnight to order it, and I still screwed it up. I was really tired that night. They have an upgrade program, but somehow I thought I clicked the box, but it didn't click, and you know, it just got weird. And to be honest, I just was not in the mood to spend 3 hours on the phone with Apple to sort it all out.
Yeah. At that time,
so yeah. I just ordered a new one, and because the first order didn't take right or something, so I just ordered a new one. But I didn't do that till the next day, and then by then, the phone I wanted was on back order, so I've got to wait a little while. And
good
it just continues to get more hilarious. I mean, they went to ship my phone, and my credit card company decided that was a fraudulent transfer, so that held it up for a few days. And once I convinced them it wasn't fraudulent, then they approved it. And oh my goodness, so it was a. It was a lot of fun figuring that out.
God, the drama.
Yeah, you know, it is and it is. I was telling, we were talking about the dinner table, and I said, you know, my parents grew up in the Great Depression in the U.S. They had my mom and my grandfather, they moved into like the backwoods of Missouri and lived in a cabin that was abandoned because they didn't have any money or food. And so whenever I complain about how long it takes to get my new iPhone, I have to put that in perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're getting the new Apple Watch Series 2, I believe.
Yeah, I did. I have that, and it's awesome. It's great.
And you've been wearing it surfing?
Yeah, yeah. I was afraid that I would lose it in the ocean because when I surf, I spend as much time upside down in the water as I do on the board. I'm terrible at it, but I love it. And so far, it's withstood that. And it's great just being able to not think about it and have it on your wrist. Also, I would say if someone, I'm not sure it's worth upgrading. I mean, I'm an edge case and a super nerd and I can't help myself, but, the new watch is significantly brighter. That's the most impressive thing for me with this watch.
Okay.
I mean, you look at the screen and it is a lot brighter.
Cause they said that, they said, oh, what was it now? 1,000 nits or whatever it was. But I was just like, okay, is that good? And I think they said with the iPhone 7 as well, brighter display. And I'm kind of looking at it like, yeah, it looks pretty good, but I can't see a huge difference from the 6S. But that's really interesting to hear that it's actually like very noticeable on your end. That's good. Because I was actually thinking, I've never had the Apple Watch. I'm not the early adopter that you are, but and I just wasn't quite convinced of the need of it. But now I'm very tempted to get it just to get on the bandwagon. And now that it is a bit more of a powerhouse and it can handle the software, I'm pretty tempted by it.
Well, it's not something that you have to have. I'll tell you that straight up. But it's awful convenient. Like, there's a couple things I like about it. The fitness tracking is a thing for me. Like, I get up and walk every day, and I'm always going to make sure I get my heart rate up for 30 minutes a day. And all these things I'm doing because the technology is gaming me. You know, you get these rings, these fitness rings. So
yeah.
I can't help myself. Like, if you get one, let me know, Paul. We'll share. You know, you can share rings.
Sure.
You can call each other out if you didn't do it. The other thing I like about it is on a productivity basis, they there's a couple things. Like on the bottom of my watch face, it has my next appointment all day. And I'm one of those guys that makes a lot of appointments. I mean, I make appointments with other people, but I also make appointments with myself. If I've got a big project, I need to drive 2 hours into a project, I'll block it off. And I just look at my wrist and it tells me what I need to be doing, which is nice. Another nice thing about it is you get your notification. So if your phone is in your pocket, and I've got the big jumbo phone, the big iPhone Plus, so I don't want to take it out. And if someone texts me, I can just look at my wrist and see what the text is. So it's a bunch of little things that really adds up to being pretty valuable.
Yeah, and the waterproof, the new waterproof aspect of it is just, it amazes me. And they Apple made it a big part of their, promotional videos and things. You can go swimming with it. And it really is taking that fitness tracker to the next level, which, I don't think the Fitbits, for example, are waterproof yet. I might be mistaken in saying that. Maybe the new one is. But yeah, awesome that you can even have it surfing. That's incredible. And actually, I suppose one of the biggest concerns with surfing is not the fact that it's, it feels weird having a watch on your wrist when you're out surfing, but maybe like banging it against the board or something. But I guess they're pretty well built. It's going to be pretty durable for that kind of thing, I suppose.
Yeah. And I honestly, when I'm out there, I've just been wearing it just because I can at this point.
Yeah.
It's not like I'm out there like answering text messages.
No.
But it is also nice to know when you have to go. Like, I'll set an alarm because then you go out, any type of physical activity, you go out there and you forget, you lose track of time.
Yeah, so yeah.
I set an alarm, and that way my watch tells me I have to go be an adult again.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Hold on one second. I'm going to shut the doors. My wife just came home. You there?
Yeah.
I'm giving you tons of editing work here. Sorry.
Nah, that's all good. I'm Haley, my wife, I'm actually training her up on editing the podcast. She's helping me, so this will be good for her.
All right. Nice.
Let me see my question. I think I've actually covered most of the things I wanted to. So unless you think there's any other final interesting topics to discuss, I don't know, we can just wrap it up.
I'm good. I do have a thing about technology and productivity if you'd like to go there.
Yeah, how can I lead you into that?
How do you see the role of technology in productivity?
Okay. Okay, so we just come off the back of talking about the Apple Watch, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And David, so one final question for you. I mean, obviously, in this day and age, there are so many apps and tools available to us. You've got your Apple Watch, the iPad, so many different apps. Every other week, there's a new tool or gadget coming out. Obviously, getting the balance right between technology and getting stuff done is really important. How do you see that balance, or how do you see the role of technology and productivity kind of playing together?
Paul, that's a good question, because I feel like that it's a very slippery slope. To start with, I mean, the reason that I like to write books about this stuff and do videos on it is because it is super productive to use technology to your benefit. I mean, you are way, especially in today's world where a lot of more stuff is thrown at you than ever before. You need technology on your side. But there's a reason for the word productivity porn, too. And I think it's really easy to start spending so much time trying to find out what's new and shiny and, what's the best way to do this. You need to keep kind of an idea of how much time you're going to invest in learning these tools and make sure you pick carefully. And, I've been recommending stuff throughout this podcast, so there's no question that I think you should learn some of this stuff. But be strategic about it, and don't ever get yourself into that spot where you spend so much time playing with the new and shiny tools that you don't actually get work done. I mean, a good example is task managers. If you're spending 2 hours a day, perfecting your task list for the day, then you're actually just not doing work, and this is just a version of, avoiding work. So you need to figure out the way to do this that doesn't do that. So I'm a big fan of it, but I do think that people need to kind of be aware and be careful you don't fall into the trap.
Yeah, it's a balance with everything, right? I mean, you make a really good point. You definitely don't want to fall into that trap of testing out all the new tools or constantly be maintaining your system versus just doing the work. But at the same time, trying to find new ways to be more efficient. Because, I mean, I just go back to what you said earlier about how the goal is not to be more efficient and save time here and there so that you can take on 10 times more work. It's actually just so that you can go home a little bit earlier and get your job done in half the time, ideally. And so it's just striking that balance. And yeah, I completely agree. Don't get too carried away, but yeah, see what you can do to just be more efficient. So no, David, thank you so much for coming on the show, because it's been really good just learning from you and picking your brain personally to see what we can do to be more productive on the Mac. And just one more time, thanks again for all the great advice that you put out on the podcast with Free Agents as well, which is actually the new podcast I've been really enjoying as well, starting to do some consulting and kind of freelancing myself. It's been really great learning about that side of kind of your work as well. Just thanks for everything that you do and keep it up.
Thanks so much, Paul. It was my pleasure.
My name is Paul Miners, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Productivity Podcast. For me, productivity is a tool for getting more out of life. I believe that if you can be more effective and efficient, not just at work, but in everything that you do, that this, I truly believe, is the pathway to a happier and more fulfilling lifestyle. Join me at paulminers.com and sign up to my free email course, the 7-Day Productivity Plan, to learn more about my approach to productivity and how I balance multiple projects, how I use different apps within my productivity system, and how I get more done with less stress. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd really appreciate if you could leave me a review. Let me know if you have any questions or what you'd like to learn more about. And who knows, maybe I'll decide to talk about it on the show. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you next time on the Productivity Podcast.